Baseball Elite coming at you. Jeff Manns hanging out with you. FantasyGuru.com, EliteFantasy.com, GuruElite.com. All three places. That Jeff_Manns on Twitter. The Jeff Manns on other social media outlets. But the star, the real star of the show, let's face it, is baseball guys himself, Ray Flowers, here for it, our first in-season episode of Fantasy Baseball Elite. What's up, Ray? Whoa, what did you go? Hitters against Jose Urena? What is that?
There you go. Yes, line drive shots all over the ballpark, Jeff.
There you go. What's up? How is the transformation, Ray Flowers, for you personally from preseason, spring training to the beginning of the season? I tell people all that. Ray has been writing about the 2019 season, MLB season, literally since October 4th of last year, of 2018. So is this like, do you just get a deep breath? Is it finally here? Or do you miss the preseason since it's been part of your life so long? What are your feelings as we get started?
You know, it's nice to have games that matter. You stare at the same thing, but nothing changes. Like you're saying, it's month after month after month. You're just staring at the same data, and it's like, well, let me go over it again. Did I miss something the first pass through? And so it's nice to have information that matters. I think that gets offset a little bit by injuries. I mean, they're all over the place. Everyone's seemingly getting hurt. It's the same thing we saw last year. So then you start getting a little frustrated because, damn, I put a good team together, but now I got three guys that are hurt. But yeah, I like the fact that there's actual game action. It's just, you know, it's new and different. Plus, you get to watch games on TV too, which is always nice, Jeff.
It's nice. It's nice to see players. I think my favorite part of the beginning of a season is to see players that have changed. I like seeing different pitches. I like seeing velocity differences. I like seeing different batting styles and approaches. Like, I like seeing that. I remember a couple of years ago, 5 years ago probably now, remember when Curtis Granderson decided he's going to start taking walks? He's going to, like, be patient. It was like, wow, look at this. And it was like, oh, hey, you know. I just get immense joy out of seeing players. Because when I see that, Ray, transpire on the field, I go, that guy put in work. Now, whether it works, how much it works, to what level, I don't know. But he's been doing it all off season, getting better. You know, he's trying to find a way to better his game, and I respect that a lot of these players. So that's what I like to look for.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not just he reported in great shape, which is the report that
– six-pack abs.
Yeah, it goes around the world. It's the next level of things that really matter. And then that's what you're talking about, the refinement, the energy, the dedication. Those things matter.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, you want to know – listen – Ray's been working since October 4th, the day last season ended. I've been working since March 31st. I've been working, you know, since January doing fantasy baseball. It's good to know that somebody else is too, that these players that are getting paid millions of dollars that we all emulate and we all are drafting and using and all this stuff, that they are too. You know, that, I mean, it's good to know that they are, because I'll be up for, like, so on the daily side over at elitefantasy.com, right? For an example, right? Every baseball season, listen, baseball is not, I'm fair to say, it's not my number one sport. Not that I don't love it. I actually think baseball is probably my favorite sport, just personal favorite. I think I'm best at analyzing football just because I have a bigger advantage over people. You are a lot smarter baseball than I am. Hence why I attach myself to you and don't let go. You know, but so I hold my own in baseball. I do. And I have my thoughts and my beliefs. And all preseason long, I feel like I'm on an island. Like, I'm out here talking about batting orders and rotations and bullpens and lineups and, you know, all this stuff, and how many home runs were hit in the leagues and how many steals and how many innings pitched are from bullpen. And I feel like everyone's looking at me like, get this guy, get, you know, GTFO for the people like the acronyms out there, right? Get out of here with that stuff. Yeah. All people, everybody else wants just to say, Kenta Maeda, you know, his fastball that moves such and such inches and Tanner Roark doesn't. And like, they want to examine player by player stuff, whereas I take an overview. And I'll be honest, I get a little bit worried going into the year. I'm like, all right, did I take a very firm stance and approach? Have I done it the right way? am I onto something? Is this going to pay off? And then it took 2 days into the season. I go, oh my God, thank God I did it this way. I really am, Ray, I'm telling you, I'm looking in the DFS community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching people. I'm trying to be nice. Playing.
Don't be. Just go.
Pitchers.
For it.
A Pirates bullpen is great. No, it's really not. I'm sorry, but I've done the research and I understand that Vasquez has been very good. But I also understand that guys like Kyle Crick have done it for 1 year. And Kingham is a fallen prospect that's very hittable and all this kind of stuff. You know, I see the kinks in the armor. I see starting pitchers. I also see like Eric Lauer is not throwing a cutter anymore. He's throwing a slider instead, and it's you know, and then this team can't hit lefties, and this team can, and those little, and this guy's hitting up in the order, and this guy's not. You know, Ben Zobrist is a decent acquisition, and nobody was drafting him in seasonal leagues, and even in NFBC. And meanwhile, here we are at 2,500 using him on day two of the season, and he's going 2-for-4 and paying off 6x and stuff. I'm like, thank God I knew this, because I'm watching other people and fail. We are recording this 5 days into the season, five games, I think, and or six games. It's the sixth. It's going on right now as we speak. I haven't lost a single cash game yet, Ray. Not one single one. And again, I'm going to, and I'm only, you know, I'll end up at 65 to 75% somewhere in there, hopefully for the whole season. But I'm just saying, I feel like I have such an advantage over some people, Ray. And I feel that the work we put in, the work we put in at fantasyguru.com, the work you've done, the work Vlad Sedler's done, and even little old me, the work I've done is actually paying off, and that we all have a pretty sizable advantage until players' arms fall off and legs fall off.
Yeah, right.
And we're all screwed.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, we all bring different things to the table. I see the game different than you do. It doesn't make me right and you wrong. We see it different. And it's more, I've always looked at it more, you know, since we worked together for years, that we augment each other. I don't look at it as one's better or worse. It's just we augment. And the things I focus on aren't necessarily what you do and vice versa. And you could say, well, you know, Ray, I looked at divisions and arms. We had an article, you know, in the preseason talking about that. Who else is talking about that?
Right.
Divisions where, you know, oh, everyone's worried about, the, you know, so-and-so being a platoon guy, but there's no left-handed starting pitchers in this division. Who else was doing that? I don't see anyone else doing that. That's extremely valuable. You know, Ted did his four-part series, Ted Schuster, on the splits, and I don't know how many people, you know, went through all that data, but holy crap. I
mean, yeah, right.
You know, that was a ton of freaking data. And that's a different slant, too, than I think a lot of people, you know, handle it. We had, you know, the Burr report that we've talked about here on the podcast that we have at the site. We've done that a lot. You've done the draft pockets for years. All these things that we do, I think, augment each other. And what we tend to get, because unlike some of the other sports, like in football, it's so much about coaching. It's about the scheme. It's about the game flow, all these things. You know, in baseball, it's pitcher versus hitter. I mean, you know, when you break it down, it's pitcher versus hitter, you know, and you can start then knocking pieces off based upon defensive alignment and defense, you know, behind it and ballpark, you know, all these things. But it's pitcher versus batter. And I think a lot of baseball analysts dive into that because let's also remember if a guy plays a whole season, we have 500, 600, 700 plate appearances to look at. It's a lot of data. I think people focus on that, Jeff, and sometimes don't pay enough attention to the other things.
I totally agree with that. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to go at it. I think fantasy baseball, you can make it as simple or as complicated as you want, you know, depending on your level of involvement and the stakes that you're playing for and all of that. But, yeah, I think we've had a sizable advantage, at least to start the season. Now, like I talked about this there, right, is the thing that will derail us are these injuries. So let's talk about the injuries. Because I want to ask you a question right off the top. Because
Okay. What
is happening with the Yankees? What is going on here with the New York Yankees? And, you know, we know Severino before the season. Stanton goes down. Okay, he's always hurt. But now it's Andujar. We know Aaron Hicks. For one, they signed him to a seven-year extension, and he's hurt, got a back injury all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? Is this all above board? Are they resting players? Is it just a string of bad luck? What's going on specifically with the Yankees before we get to some of these other points?
Yeah, and this is, you know, we've talked about this and, you know, the idea you brought up DFS, the idea of stacking and all that. Okay. season's different. And we always get the question of how many Yankees is too much, how many Red Sox is too much, how many whatever team is too much. And I've always said, well, I'm just not into that. I'm not stacking players in season long. And the reason I've given, which is unscientific completely, is because sometimes things go really right for a team and sometimes they go really wrong for a team, and it doesn't make any sense. And I feel like that's where we're at the Yankees. It doesn't make any sense. The Yankees have like 10 guys on the injured list, and Troy Tulowitzki is not one of them.
What are the odds?
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, so I don't know. There's no explanation that can, you know, be laid out here that will satisfy people, because I don't think there's an answer to it. I don't know if it's going to be a season-long thing, if it's just been unlucky, but, you know, these kind of things happen. Teams are expected to win 95 games, they win 75. Happens all the time, and the Yankees are starting out both on the hitting and the pitching side in a pretty rough spot.
They are, and, I mean, they've got a pretty deep roster, 25-man. They've got guys in the minor leagues that can be brought up and plug into this lineup. They've got youngsters like Greg Bird. That's another one that's surprisingly not hurt yet. And Luke Voit, who hit a home run on opening day and has been a find in the middle of that order. So Yankees are one of those teams that could sort of handle it. Where do you stand with a guy like Andujar versus Stanton? I mean, prognosis. For one, what's wrong with Giancarlo Stanton? I know this is your guy. You love to whip up on him.
Yeah.
We don't have a timetable for this guy.
No, and the interesting thing is, with both of these guys, there's a little bit of uncertainty in the press as to what really happened. And in the case of Stanton, no one saw him get hurt. Like, when this story broke, I was
none of these injuries. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I looked it up. Severino, Andujar, Stanton, and fourth guy I mentioned that I somehow am forgetting.
Who? Hicks?
Yeah, Hicks. Nope, none of them. There's nothing to point to. Not one, like, oh, this is a moment they got hurt. No, not at all. I saw Giancarlo Stanton swing and miss at two outside curveballs on the outer half of the plate. Just, you know, something that has been his problem. You start a curveball middle out and let it spin outward to the outside edge, he's gone. When he's off his, you know, when he's locked in, he's going to hit that ball out to right field or right center. When he's not going well, he's going to swing and miss. And I saw him swing and miss embarrassingly. And two of those pitches, very next day, it's like, oh, yeah, he's got, what was it, shoulder? Like, what? Wait? What did that happen? I didn't see it happen. I watched him play the whole game. I don't believe it, Ray. I just don't believe some of these injuries. I'll be honest with you. Yeah. I wonder what teams are really doing. And I'm not necessarily saying it's the Yankees, because there's another injury I'm going to bring up in a minute that I will tell you. I don't believe the player whatsoever. But do you think there's something to this 10-day disabled list leading everybody going on?
I mean, the problem is when you run into a wall like Justin Upton, all right, everyone saw it. You know what happened, right? You get hit by a pitch, you know, whatever. When it's these injuries, I mean, Sand himself said after the game, well, I tweaked it, but I thought he stayed in the game and thought I'd just take a day or two off, and then they ran tests, and supposedly, in his case, we don't know. It's a bicep strain, okay? And it's like, dude's got huge biceps, so that's an issue, right? This could take 10 days. It could take 2 months. We have no clarity whatsoever. They haven't told us anything. The Andujar thing, you know, it sounds like he's out for April, but they're floating surgery with him, and if he has surgery, his season's over. The Hicks thing, Hicks has been hurt 40 times. It's, you know, I don't think he's fake because he breaks down an awful lot. I don't know the answer, Jeff. And it's really difficult when you have these scenarios, in particular, Andujar and Stanton, who these guys have injuries, and a team, for whatever reason, really isn't giving us the time frame to look at.
I agree with that. I'm curious on how this is going to play out with all four of these injuries to the Yankees. Let me get to the guy, though, that I don't believe. Hunter Strickland. Don't believe it. I'm sorry. I just don't believe it. Ray, you've experienced with this guy punching things. He's a head case. He's a mental guy. I don't think he's all there upstairs, to be quite honest with you. And that game was one of the weirdest things. The Red Sox started to hit him, and you know, nothing was wrong. And then he kind of called this trainer out. Right? He called the trainer out. He's like, okay, trainer comes out and says, okay, you know, you're okay. You're fine. Mitch Moreland is up to bat, about to put the game away. And boom, Mitch Moreland takes some yard over the right field fence on a line drive for a go ahead three run jack. And immediately that's it. And he goes to dugout. And after the game, he's telling everybody he's shoulders hurt. Like, Scott Service came out and was like, I don't know. I mean, Service did his best job possible of saying, I guess he's not feeling right, but he didn't tell us before. He didn't have any velocity drop. Nothing happened, essentially, except he got slacked. And now he's out. And they're saying he's going to be out several months. Well, this guy, I don't believe it, right? I called him out on Sirius the other day. I'm calling him out now. I don't believe him.
Someone sent me a note. I think it was, and sorry, they all run together. I think it was in the chat room. And if you haven't taken advantage of that, folks, if you're part of the VIP package, go to the site, click on the MLB tab, you know, go down there, click on live chat. We're having chats pretty much multiple times a week. I think there's one scheduled for Wednesday as well, where I'm in there for a dedicated hour or two answering questions. You can ask questions at any point throughout the week, and we'll get to them too. Someone asked a question about, you know, they were picking up Strickland thinking they're getting a big win. And I'm like, no, you're not. Understand that the bullpen with the Mariners is a mess, but understand that Hunter Strickland is a disaster. And I mean, all you got to do is the guy broke his hand punching the wall or whatever it was. He hit Bryce Harper and got in a fight, and Buster Posey stood at home plate and let Harper charge the mound. Didn't even try. No one likes Hunter Strickland. He's got problems. Okay. And he's his own person and whatever. The issue of, hey, I'm okay, hey, I'm not okay, and now I'm out 2 months, I agree with you, doesn't make any sense. Makes no sense. You can't throw a ball 94 miles an hour and have pulled a lat muscle that keeps you out of action for 75 days. It's not possible. Yeah. Can I just be honest? Scientifically, it's not possible. So I no idea what's going on there with him. Wasn't in on him at all. I told everyone, you know, break glass under duress, adding him even to your team in the preseason. And now move on.
So the natural question from there is who's closing in Seattle, because this Mariner bullpen is atrocious. Even with Strickland, it was bad. I mean, it's bad, but at least, you know, he is a live arm and it's fine. But this is, who's closing games here? Now, they just activated Anthony Swarzak from the injured list. Does he get a chance to close? They've been going committee. Elias got a save the other day. Guerin got a save opportunity, but he got pulled out too. Who's the guy to own if you had to choose, Ray?
Yeah, nobody. And that's the problem. I mean, 2 days ago it was Guerin. Now with Swarzak back, you know, on the team, I'd probably say him. But the fact is that there is no plan here. They don't have an answer. They could not have in good conscience thought that they were going to get 70 outings from Hunter Strickland this year. So they knew what they had with him. He was going to get hurt or something was going to happen at some point. And this is the crap they have behind them. Like this is not even an example of, hey, these guys have great arms and they're just inexperienced or whatever. Guerin's just a guy. Fest is just a guy. Swarzak, you know, he's 34 almost. He's okay when he's healthy. He's frequently injured. You mentioned Elias. He's not a closer. They don't have an option. They really don't. And they're not going to go make a trade to get somebody. So I think this is committee city. I would say Swarzak, but I feel terrible about that. Like, I'm not telling any – if you're going to go bid on him, you're not going to blow number one waiver priority to him. You're not going to go spend $150 to add him out of your – yeah, he's just – throw a couple bucks, take a shot, maybe you get lucky, but don't be surprised if you don't.
By the way, how great was Ray Flowers right there, folks? Committee city? That's gold. Gold, Jerry. Gold.
I never used that before.
Yeah. That's so good. It's just, I know it rolled off the tongue. I'm like, he didn't even realize he said it. So perfect. New feature coming to fantasyguru.com, everybody. Committee City.
Hey,
spinning the hits of all the bullpens you know and hate.
Yeah. Every Thursday, by the way, that's when we have set up on our schedule to do the closer chart. So every Thursday, unfortunately, I'll be wasting 3 hours of my life updating this every week, because there's always something to update at the closer position.
And I mean, listen, we got the Burr Report on Wednesdays, and you know, I think let's talk about this for a minute, because at this stage of the game, all right, I was a closer early guy in draft season. And now whoever we drafted's on our team. I have two methods here for closers and save category. One, I don't want to fall behind too far on the save category. So I want somebody there that's closing games. Whether you have an Edwin Diaz or maybe Sean Doolittle or somebody in the middle, or maybe you just have one guy and it's a Greg Holland for right now, whatever. Fine. I want at least one closer where you're getting saves. But if you want to just sort of bide your time a bit, and whether it's the Seattle bullpen or others, acquire the best arm. And that's where you could use resources like our Burr Report. We have over at Elite Fantasy, we have the bullpen reports. It's for daily fantasy, but I think it would help people in seasonal environment too. You know, get the best arm, right? You've been preaching this for years. Just get the talent, get the skills. Eventually those skills will, especially if there's any kind of debate right now amongst closer, like Seattle especially, you know, there's a couple situations where the best arm is just going to win. Like, it's eventually going, even if he's coming in the fifth, sixth inning right now, it's 3 weeks and he's going to be the closer. And, you know, whether you're talking Kansas City or you're talking about Tampa Bay, Boston, Baltimore, Seattle, there's a bunch of different opportunities available, I think. So you like that approach, Ray, that as long as you're not getting too far behind in saves, you know, get a elite arm, somebody who's pitching well that you've seen out of the bullpen, and just kind of ride them to until they get the closer role.
Yeah, and a good way to use the last – this is my personal feeling. A good way to use the last spot on your roster isn't with Austin Hayes. It's not with someone in the minor leagues. It's with one of these it's with Ty Buttrey or Joe Jimenez, like, or Sir Anthony Dominguez. Like, it's one of those guys, because those guys burst through, and if they actually become the closer, they have a lot more value than almost every rookie that you're holding on to on the bench spot, hoping they come up, because they're not up till June, then they hit 210 the first month. You know, these impact arms in the bullpen can make a huge difference. The problem is, and I've already gone on record as saying this, 2019 is going to be the last year we use saves in fantasy. We're going to move to solds next year. We're going to do it as an industry.
You know it's not going to happen.
And then I'm going to stop playing, because what's the point of this? I mean, you know, what's the point? Because all we're doing is guessing. Dude, White Sox, Cole Mays not
great. I agree with you 1,000%. Yeah. I would have moved 5 years ago, but you know there's no chance. Like, these leagues will never change, right?
But I've tried this in many leagues, and I'll have to – if this goes the way it looks like it's going, and we're a week into the season, it's already messier than it has been forever. We have to, because all we're doing is guessing. All who's going to merge with the Twins? Oh, it's Taylor Rogers. No one picked him. Who's going to merge with Mariners? We just talked about it. We have no idea. Who's going to merge with the Marlins? Is it Romo? You know, the Braves announced they were going to use two guys, but Minter got hurt. What's going to happen when he gets healthy? The Royals, for God's sakes, have turned to Ian Kennedy. Okay, that's where we're at in 2009.
Hilarious. By the way, yeah, when he got said, that was hilarious.
Yeah, that's where we're at in 2019. A guy that's been a professional pitcher for 15 years and has never been a reliever.
He won like 21 games with the Diamondbacks back in the day.
Yeah, he's made 295 outings at the big league level before he had a save or something. It's like, come on, man. So that's where we're at. You know, someone said to me today, Ray, is Andrew Miller still the closer of the Cardinals? I'm like, Andrew Miller was never the closer of the Cardinals. He was right. One of the two guys. He and Jordan Hicks were the, you know, it's like This is just how it is. And so what we end up doing is we waste so much time, so much energy. If we're not going to move to this, if we're not going to move to Solds, if we're going to keep it closer, we have to enact Vickery Fab bidding. We have to. Because what happens is, and Vickery Fab bidding is basically very
explain
simple.
Explain to people what Vickery means.
Yeah, it's very simple. Whatever your bid is that wins, you end up bidding $1 more than the next person. So let's say I bid $50 for Kelvin Herrera this week, and no one else bid more than $25. My bid becomes $26 because you take the next highest bid, you add a buck to it, and I get to save my money. Because all we're doing is guessing. It takes no talent to wait until Alex Colome blows his arm out to then go add Kelvin Herrera. So we shouldn't be penalized by blowing our fab because we're just, I got to get a guy. Damn it, what am I going to do? We need to enact the Vickery method, especially for these relievers, because it's all a guess. No one knows. You'll have Herrera this week. You'll drop him because you need a backup catcher. Next week, Colome will blow his arm out. And it's like, oh, hell. You know. So it's just a mess, and I want to get away from it. We got to focus more. We just talked about how much time and energy. Spend 6 flipping months breaking these guys down. In a week into the season, it doesn't matter because so-and-so loses the job and so-and-so gets it.
I'm going to bring up something that's going to really light your fuse. But let me just float this idea to you. Where do you stand on team bullpens?
I think, really, it's not a bad idea. I don't want to do it
right. Because,
you know, there are too many factors involved. And, you know,
it takes some of the – I'll speak for myself. Yeah. It takes some of the fun out of it, of course. But, you know, we're made such a huge investment to bullpens over at Fantasy Guru and Elite Fantasy. And we're spending – we have people dedicated to this now. And, right, you're doing it. And I'm contributing it. It's so – it's – I don't – I'm so torn on the fun and fruitfulness of uncovering, you know, the next guy, the next Chris Davinsky that pops out of nowhere or whatever, and then also having to keep up with it to the level you're talking about, like spending – like I was thinking maybe we have a separate fab budget. You know, you mentioned Vickery or separate fab budget for bullpens or closers or whatever, because you're right. All we're doing – it's the preseason notion, and you and I talked about it on this podcast before – every time somebody says, oh, I don't pay for closers, I don't do closers, you know, again, 10 guys, let's say 8 people in your league say the same thing. They're not going to do closers. They're not paying for closers. They're not going to draft closers. I hope everybody understands that that means the money that you're going to need to spend for closers when they become available, because you aren't going to 8 teams punting the category, of course. Right, of course. That would be idiotic. That just means they're all going to be bidden, and they're going to have to bid high, and it drives the price up. For it, not just for the premium guys, for every closer that ever comes up. So I might as well just draft them. Give me Diaz and Jansen. Let me roll that way and not have to spend my fab budget on it. Something does have to be done, and I'm just curious whether or not a team bullpen mentality might be an option or a way to go, or even a team pitching staff.
Yeah, it's just to me, it's like playing team defense in football. It just – because when, because you know, there's left-handed, there's loogies, there's guys in the bullpen that are failed starters. Yeah, there you go, let one loose.
Oh,
there's guys that get called up, you know, because so and so is tired, or you know what I mean. It's like, yeah, you know, I want to focus again. If we're talking about focusing on the skills, you say each bullpen has 3 or 4 good guys. They have 3 or 4 guys. You know, it's like, so it's just. It's not crazy to suggest it. I'm just not a huge fan of it, but I totally understand why someone would go in that direction, Jeff.
While we're speaking of closers, again, as of this recording, it hasn't happened yet, but I will burst if I don't get it out. There is something horrifically wrong with Raisiel Iglesias of the Reds. I mean, I don't know. I tweeted it out Monday night. I said, listen, this guy's on the DL tomorrow morning. First thing, no doubt about it. No brainer. He can't pitch. He's throwing 89 miles an hour. What is – I mean, how do we not know something? This guy's velocity was down in spring training. He's getting the hell kicked out of him, right? And yeah. Nothing's been done. Either.
They're bringing him in before then, too.
Yeah, as of now, nothing's being done. Now, by the time you guys listen to this, I fully expect he'll be on the DL, and just know that I didn't say this after the fact. What's going to happen here in Cincinnati? Because Iglesias was in that rung of top 6-7 guy, even after he struggled in spring training a bit, right?
Hunter Green blew his arm out, the 100-mile-an-hour youngster, so he's having Tommy John surgery, just to throw that out there since we're talking the Reds. But, yeah, Iglesias hasn't performed up to expectations. He's been used before the ninth inning. They said before the season that they would use him that way. So, again, this is a team that said, well, we've got a closer in Iglesias, but we'll use him when the game situation dictates, which, again, is totally fine. If I'm a manager and I'm trying to win games, I want my best guy out there at the most important time. Yet another reason to move on from saves, because the most important time isn't always when it's 3-0 in the ninth inning. David Hernandez got a save early in the year, but I think Jared Hughes is the backup. He was the backup last year. Now, the issue is that Jared Hughes is actually not as skilled as David Hernandez. We were just talking about it. David Hernandez got better stuff, but I think David Hughes is a fallback. So I agree with you. If you own Raisiel Iglesias and you have the opportunity when you hear this, because you run FAB multiple times a week or waiver wires are open or whatever, be very smart to grab Jared Hughes. I think he's the next guy up in Cincinnati.
Yeah, that would be the guy. Hernandez is an option down there as well. But just to compare, Iglesias is a guy who, when he moved to the bullpen and in the later innings of the bullpen, this guy was throwing 96, 97. He was in the high 80s, low 90s. He's averaging so far this year 92 miles an hour on his fastball. You can't lose 5 miles an hour on your fastball very often and still have it be as effective. And the fact that he throws sort of a two-seamer along with the four-seamer and they're basically the same pitch at the same velocity, that's why, quite honestly, he was never a very – you know, never made it as a starting pitcher. So there's not a lot here. He's going to get smacked. It's not going to stop is what I'm saying. He needs that velocity, in my opinion, Ray, to be effective. And without it, I think that he succumbs that role. So keep an eye on that right there. Other injuries, Daniel Murphy, that blowout, hand injury, surprise, always hurt Daniel Murphy. It's a bummer. I was high on him going to Colorado. Everybody gets hurt, but, you know, Murphy leaves a pretty gaping hole. What's the plan for the Rockies? Who benefits most from Murphy's? Because this is a middle-of-the-order bat. So Mark Reynolds, but he only hits lefties. Is he the guy? Like, who gets that job? Because when Colorado goes back to Coors Field, somebody else, there's another spot in the middle of that Rockies order that we should be aware of. Who benefits?
Yeah, this is another situation which has been on the tip of everyone's tongue, right? Hampson and McMahon, how's that going to play out? And Hampson's not playing at the start, and everyone's saying drop him. I'm like, look, if you're going to draft the guy and drop him 3 games in, you might as well quit. I told someone that in the chat room. I'm like, you might as well just get ready for fantasy football because you can't be giving up on players after 3 games. Then we get the injury to Murphy, and all of a sudden, the clouds part, right, Jeff? And all of a sudden, McMahon and Hampson are in the lineup daily. But then there's Mark Reynolds. And it's like,
yeah,
I understand, because Mark Reynolds, if used properly, is an effective major league hitter. He is.
Sure.
I get it. If you're the Rockies, what the hell are you doing? Well, I don't.
Why bother?
Like, yeah. If you're going to keep Hampson and McMahon on the big league roster, why are you letting them sit on the bench for Mark Reynolds? The Rockies are not winning the division this year, okay? They're not winning the World Series this year. Ain't happening. If you're going to keep young players up that you actually, in theory, really want to build your organization around, and McMahon or Hampson are supposed to be guys that they want to do that with, it's idiotic to have one of them sitting on the bench so Mark Reynolds can play. Yet, that's what they've been kind of mixing in here. So I really hope they figure this out. Because another thing that they've done, not just them, everyone does with these young players, you can't jerk young players around. You're supposed to put players in position to have success. Putting a young player at first base one day, at second base one day, batting fourth one day, batting seventh one day, and on the bench the next day, that's not doing anyone any good. You got to put someone in the lineup. You got to let them run. You got to let them do their thing. All the time, put players in positions to succeed. The Rockies aren't doing that. I hope they will wise up. But for now, the presence of Mark Reynolds does make me nervous, especially for Hampson.
Yeah, it seems that way. The lineup is out for Tuesday evening, and Garrett Hampson is hitting second ahead of Nolan Arenado. Love that. Love that. Could not love it more. But Mark Reynolds in the lineup hitting seventh. They are facing a lefty in Blake Snell, so we'll see how this all plays out for Colorado in that lineup. That's just a huge spot to fill, and some opportunity definitely will be there as well. Francisco Lindor setback for the Cleveland Indians. Opening day, Ray Flowers, I made a fantastic call, I guess. Jose Berríos against the Indians. Cleveland doesn't have anything in the lineup. And Ramirez is now about a week removed from the bruise. He seems totally fine. But the Tribe are one of those teams that when you look at this team, you know, and we saw Carrasco sort of implode. Bauer had a good outing. Kluber's not going deep. You start looking like, what are the bullpens for, you know, pure garbage. Kind of look at Cleveland and like, man, how are they going to win ball games this year and who's going to produce for them?
Yeah, we got an update on the ankle issue just to put it out there for Lindor. He's not going to do anything for 7 to 10 days and then start to ramp activity back up. So it really does look like April's gone. That's where we're at right now, that, you know, and you have to be careful, just like Jeff and I talked about this in the preseason. You have to even be more concerned now about how much he will run when he returns. And if he's not running when he returns, he's Corey Seager, which is fine. But, you know, he was even drafted, even though we suggested people pump the brakes on. People are still drafting him, expecting him to steal 15 or 20 bases. It's not going to happen this year, barring something amazing. In terms of the Indians think it's 1984, and they're trying to win that way. They have not come into the – which is so odd, because the Indians started this transition – you know, with Terry Francona in the bullpen, right? They basically started this, we don't need a closer thing. We're going to mix and match and overpower teams in the playoffs. We had Andrew Miller and Allen. That's how they won. Now they've done the complete opposite, where they've said, all we care about apparently is having a good closer, which they have in Brad Hand. We'll piece together the rest of our bullpen. Our offense is awful, and we're just going to win because our pitching staff is better than anyone else in the rotation. So they're dealing like it's 1984. Now, they have had rumors about making a trade here. Because let's face it, Kluber, Bauer, Carrasco, Clevinger, Bieber, if they're healthy, it's probably the best five-seam in baseball.
Yeah.
All right? It is. And look at their outfield. Leonis Martin, Tyler Naquin, Jake Bowers. Really? I mean, that's – Hanley Ramirez is your DH. Hanley Ramirez, who's, you know, basically was out of baseball for half the season last year. You got Brad Miller and Eric Stametz playing. I mean, they need to make a trade for a hitter. And as we've said all along, make a trade with the Padres. The Padres have 9 outfielders. Padres need pitching. I don't understand what their plan is, Jeff. The plan that they have right now falls apart if any of their pitchers get hurt in the rotation, because that's all they got right now.
It really is. And pitchers will break down. See it all the time. We're talking about, I mean, there's Blake Snell, whose velocity is down to start the season. There's pitchers, you know, we talked about Iglesias, who's a closer, granted, but every year Chris Sale was shellacked in his first start, didn't make it out of the third inning. I mean, you just, pitchers are going to break down. So if all you have is the starting five, and everything in baseball says pitch count, innings limit, monitor velocity, monitor their behaviors, blisters, you can't pitch through, you can't pitch through any kind of tightness. That's your strength of your club. It's a bad build. You know, it makes you see why certain teams spend $300 million on Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. Yes, you know, whereas 2 years ago, 10 years ago, they would spend $180 million on Mike Hampton. And, you know, guys like that, pitchers, you don't build around pitching anymore because you can't, they don't hold up. They're not going to. I think it's the wrong way to build a club going into for the next 10 years. And it's the same way in fantasy too. So just, you've always got to be aware to pivot, always got to be aware of who's coming up next and, you know, where your next stop is along this train that is, or carousel, I should say, that is starting pitching. All right, so that's that. We got some – let's talk about some of the early returns across Major League Baseball here, Ray Flowers. Let's keep with the pitching aspect, the element of it a little bit. Some pitchers that threw well first time or maybe not. A guy who went the other day, Orioles righty David Hess. You know, shut down the Blue Jays fairly well. You know, has had a couple of good outings now. You know, what do we expect with David Hess?
Not much. Is that a good analysis?
Yes, that because people are excited.
Yeah,
2 days after his, you know, little, I wouldn't even call it a gem, but you know, it pitched into the ninth inning, which is rare these days.
I mentioned it on the SiriusXM show with Kyle, and I gave credit to the listeners, and I'll do it again here. I haven't got a single question to this point, not one about Jordan Zimmermann.
Oh, good.
Which I'm very pleased because, you know, he pitched extremely well his first outing too. David Hess is an interesting case because David Hess somehow is gaining 2.5 miles an hour on his fastball.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, mechanical changes, I don't know. Things have changed with him. Now, if you're throwing 92 or 94 and a half, we're talking a big difference. Okay. So if he can maintain the velocity, then we have something to start to look at. But he is not a big strikeout arm. He walks too many guys. He was extremely homer-prone last season. I need a lot more data than, you know, 8 excellent innings or whatever it was from him, 6 excellent innings from him before I get on that train, Jeff.
Also, it came against the Blue Jays. And one of the things we know about the Toronto Blue Jays, just as an overall team makeup, they don't hit sliders very well. And David Hess threw about 25% of pitches sliders, which brings me to another pitcher that had a very good first outing, and that was Tigers lefty Matt Boyd, also against, you guessed it, the Blue Jays. Also, 2-pitch pitcher, throws fastball, throws slider. Now, those who watch Boyd, another guy, velocity's up a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, he's back up in the mid-90s right there, and the slider's got – unlike David Hess, Boyd has significant movement with that slider, which is both on the horizontal and vertical plane, which we love to see. David Hess doesn't, it sits kind of flat, right? It moves a little bit, but it's not that big of a deal. So Matt Boyd.
Better than Hess.
Much better. Yeah, exactly. So what are your thoughts about Matt Boyd?
I think Matt Boyd is someone I wanted to bump up the rankings at Fantasy Guru a bunch during the off season. And I never got a chance to get to a player profile on him, unfortunately, but I will say this, that Matt Boyd is the guy that's really coming into his own. He's learning how to pitch, which sounds kind of odd. What do you mean, right? He's 28 years old and he's learning how to pitch. And some guys figure it out and some guys never do. Some guys figure it out at 34 and it doesn't matter anymore because their stuff isn't there. But I think that Boyd has identified what he does well and what he does poorly, and he's trying to maximize that. He will continue to be home run prone because he allows so many fly balls. So he's kind of at the whims of the home run to fly ball gods. So when the ball's in, he's kind of like that Dylan Bundy type. Like when it's going well, he's great. When it's going poorly, it's two home runs and I just give up six runs. But the stuff has improved. I think the stuff has been refined the way he has attacked hitters. He started this last year. You mentioned the slider. He tripled his slider usage last year. Yeah. Really changed that. Got rid of the changeup. And he has refined his delivery and his offerings to the point where he's going to be an effective pitcher. He should have a better ERA than he did last year, which isn't saying a hell of a lot. But people might have missed. He had a 1.16 whip. Like, yeah. This was a guy that he pitched effectively. Of course, he might win 8 games because the Tigers' offense sucks. But he's definitely someone, if he's on the waiver wire and you're dealing with injuries or something like that, he's someone to gobble up.
Yeah, I think he's a guy in a 12-team league. He's on the fringe in a 14- or 15-teamer. He's got to be owned at this point in time. And I think there's some upside there. You mentioned controlling, not having that much movement on your pitches and not allowing a huge amount of walks is really significant. Don't allow you want to say, we do all the preliminary work on pitching. What's their velocity? What's their movement? What's their repertoire? What pitches do they have? And then we look for, okay, where are they locating them in the zone? And how many swings outside the zone do they get? And things like that. We start, evolving and making a case for these guys. And we see, a lot of swings outside the zone. That usually leads to a lot of, not a lot of hard contact. Beautiful. That's a lot of ground balls or pop-ups or what have you. And that's successful. And a guy who doesn't put a lot of guys on base, doesn't get a lot of barrels against or hard contact, is a guy that could find a spot in my staff any day of the week. One more guy we should talk about with major velocity spike. I don't know where this came from at all, but what's up with Matt Moore? Another Tigers left-hander, a guy that you were you're experienced with quite a bit, Ray Flowers in San Francisco. I always do my impression because he's got like the best jawline ever. He looks like a Ken doll or like one of those old school anime kind of guys, like with a big square jaw, like something from Beauty and the Beast, like Gaston from Beauty and the Beast.
Gaston, nice.
Yeah, right. So, what do you think of Matt Moore? I mean, huge velocity spike, like 3-4 miles an hour up on his fastball. What's up with that?
Yeah, Matt Moore is 29 years old. There was a point in time where, and people forget this because it was a long time ago, but there was a point in time where he was I don't know if ace in waiting was the right way of saying it.
Oh, yeah, he was the guy. He was going to be the next thing with the Rays.
Yeah, I mean,
he had a playoff run from like 2010 or 2011, something like that.
Yeah, he had a strikeout inning in 2012. In 2013, he won 17 games. People forget these things, wow. Right? And then he got hurt and problems and trades, and he just basically lost it. And, when he was with the Giants a couple years ago, he was just bad. Like, I mean, it was just bad. And it looked like everything was gone. And then he went to the Rangers last year and he made some starts. He worked out of the bullpen and he similarly stunk. It was gone. And then this spring, people were a little excited, not in the fantasy universe, but people around the team were saying, there's something here. And it's like, okay. And
right.
I really need to see that after him stinking for 3 years. He looked better. And, you don't find velocity like this a decade into your career, but there it is. And, maybe, kind of thing. I still can't get behind it. It's 7 innings here. It's 10 innings in spring. But I will admit, he looks much better than he's looked the last 3 years.
The pedigree is there. You talk about a lot of movement on a fastball, another guy with good movement. He's always kind of had good movement, but he just was destroyed. I mean, he was a guy I'd stack against in DFS all the time. But, there's something there. Like you said, I'm not touching it. So if you had to rank, let's go with Hess, Boyd, Moore, and let's go those three for now. Which one would you pick up first?
I would say Boyd has to be the first. I think he's the best pitcher at this point. And for me, he's on a different level than the other two. I would tier them differently. Boyd's on the first tier. The second tier would be Moore and Hess. I'd go Hess and then Moore. I want to believe in the pedigree, but like you said, Jeff, it's been years. And I'm more willing, I think, to take a chance on Hess, who's a younger guy, and see. But I really don't have an interest at the moment in either Moore or Hess.
The flip side of this was Sonny Gray, who got absolutely destroyed. Now, Sonny Gray is a player, a lot of what they call helium in draft season, right? Guy who's moving up and up and up in boards. And we talked about Cincinnati with Iglesias. They made a lot of moves, including getting Sonny Gray and Tanner Roark and, you know, Yasiel Puig. And, you know, Cincinnati is one of those teams that people are sniffing around a little bit. Sonny Gray's first outing was absolute garbage. He was garbage in New York and the Bronx. A lot of people said, well, it's just the ballpark was a bad fit for him, yada, yada, yada. Sonny Gray, any, I mean, do you cut him after just one start? Do you stick with him? If so, how long?
I think it's too, I would say this, and I wrote about this over at the site, you know, Don't Panic articles. There's a couple of them in the Rays Ramblings. I talked about it in the podcast that went up early this week as well. You got to give these guys time. And in my opinion, you know, if we're just going to set a rough baseline, you got to give someone a month. And if you're not going to give them a month, then, you know, you shouldn't draft them. Flat out. That's just my line of thinking. And I think too many people are, you know, we're talking about six innings. We're talking about 82 pitches. I mean, it's like you make five bad pitches at 82, you give up six runs. It's like, well, okay, but, you know, it's six pitches. So in the case of Gray, I this was not a year where I was pushing him on people. This was not a year. I didn't end up with him on one team, I don't think, which is odd because he's always been one of the guys I've targeted.
Right.
I think that he's kind of that last guy on the rotation that you give time. And again, if you weren't willing to give him time, you shouldn't have drafted him.
Big, that's really key advice right there. And it's, we talk about, we've discussed that in this podcast with when it comes to prospects. And I think it's the same deal with pitchers. When you made a case for them before the season, and as we sit recording this, we're only a week and a half into the start of the season. You know, if you drafted them, if you drafted them in the 15th round, and one start is going to throw you off, then what were you doing investing in the first place? It's the same thing with going after prospects. Like, you're drafted two or three prospects, and then the minute you get, you know, Stanton and Andar, a couple of guys, Stanton and Upton on the injured reserve, injured list, and boom, you're dropping those prospects. Why'd you take them anyway? You could have had better replacement values for that. So if you made that mistake early on in the season, it's something you got to adhere to and remember. Write a little note to self, sticky noted, or however you need to remember it for the next time. Players to pick up going into the second week of the fantasy baseball season, Ray. For one, any big waiver moves for you last week? Anybody you picked up over the weekend that you're excited about?
Yeah, I wrote about it earlier in the week. I mean, it's one of those things that, and, you know, going on what I just said, let me be clear, the moves I did make were made because of injury. And I wrote about it, Rays, Ramblings, DL, and Fab. And I went through, you know, like, I think five of the teams I have. The only league where I dropped a player that I had, but not, you know, not because of injury I had to replace, was I dropped Mark Melanson and I took in the FSTA back in January. You know, that's like, okay, well, that didn't work out. That's not a problem. It was my last pick. So all the moves I made personally were moves that were just to augment my roster. I didn't get anyone that, to answer your question, no one stood out to me that I even remember at the moment that, yay, kind of thing. You know, I grabbed Brian Goodwin. Brian Goodwin was the one guy because I lost Justin Upton in a bunch of leagues. And when you're in a 15-team mixed league, not a lot on the wire. Oof. I'm hoping Brian Goodwin.
God, that's bad.
I know. I'm hoping Brian Goodwin catches fire. And if not, you know, I'll find someone else kind of thing because he figures with the power speed to play. Obviously, it's a risky pickup, as I can hear through your voice, Joe.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, like you said, 15-team league, it's a tough one. What about some of those deeper dives? Dwight Smith Jr.?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you – people, you know, he's sitting second. He's sitting up in the order. Mm-hmm. They're just grasping his straws realistically. Totally. But, I mean, Dwight Smith Jr., is he worth it in a mixed league? Is he only league eligible? Yeah. What do you think there?
The article went up on Tuesday, Prospect Watch. We're going to do a Prospect Watch every week. I'll update it. And Prospect Watch.
So on top of things.
Week number two, trying to be.
I cannot trick Ray. Like, there's nothing I can do. This guy will be ready. I could bring up any name in the world, and you're just going to know it. It's just too good.
Hopefully. That's my right. job, Jeff. That's what you pay me the big bucks for.
That's right. Exactly. I write those checks.
Yeah. My opinion on Smith is, like you said, playing daily. If you want to take a chance that this thing becomes something, have at it. The problem is for me, and I use the name Melky Cabrera, you know, Howie Kendrick, like he's that kind of hitter. I don't think he has major power. I don't think he has major base stealing speed. And I think that Austin Hayes and Yasiel Diaz are more talented guys. And those are two youngsters that the Orioles have down on the farm now. So, you know, Smith could get a two-month tryout here. You know, they might hold those two guys down until June and then let them rip to avoid the Super 2. But both those guys are more talented. Both those guys are people they want to build around. So if and when they are ready, Smith is the kind of guy that loses playing time. It's almost like, hey, we'll give it a shot. If it works out, great. You know, if he turns into be Joey Rickard, who gives a dang?
What about Anthony Alford, a prospect brought up by the Blue Jays? Blue Jays made a under-the-radar deal, Kevin Pillar going to your Giants. For one, what are your Giants doing? Like, what – me and Ted were talking about this the other day. Like, the Giants have all these – just a hodgepodge of outfielders, the Michael Reeds who smash lefties in the minor leagues, then gets up, gets one start, goes 0 for 4, and then he's back down. It's like, what are the Giants doing? And then what do you – how does Pillar fit into that?
Yeah, and that also was covered in that article because
Jesus,
I'm on it, Jeff. You never read my work, so you wouldn't know. But prospect,
I read your work; it's too much work.
You read it at nighttime too.
I do read it overnight. It's like have to backlog everything. You write three articles a day. I'm writing two articles myself, plus doing all this stuff. I'm like,
that's a lot, Jeff. That's a lot.
I bring up, everybody's like, "Yeah, I wrote about him."
Like, yeah, it's so funny. People, what do you think? I wrote about it. And someone said that with the trade. What do you think about the trade? I said, I wrote about it a half hour ago, bro.
Yeah.
It's in that Prospect Watch article. The Giants have new leadership in terms of the general manager. And everyone knows that their farm system stinks. And they've got to do what they can do to get cost-controlled veterans that can help while building the minor leagues. It's a bit strange. They traded Juan DePaula, who's one of the top 15 prospects. Mm-hmm. They got Pillar in the deal. Pillar is a solid defensive player. He's a moderate offensive guy. He can steal a base and hit a home run. He's got like a 301 on base percentage the last 4 years. He's not a very good offensive player, but he's a solid guy, plays good offense. I mean, good defense, not a killer offensively. They can control him for two more years. Their offense and defense both in the outfield was bad. And I think the Giants are trying to get a defensive player that can really help the pitching staff out in the outfield. So that's why they did it. I don't know if it's not a long-term answer by any means. The Alford thing is interesting because it now looks like Grichuk will play every day, maybe in center field. Teoscar Hernandez and Billy McKinney will see more work. Alford has been called up. Alford was, just a year ago, was like a top 60 prospect in baseball.
Yeah.
And last year was a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, he was bad. His strikeout rate went up. His swing was disjointed. He couldn't find his timing.
Yep.
His whole game just fell apart.
That worries me when I hate when prospects are like progressing and doing what they are, but they may not, one tool hasn't developed as much as another. And they decide, okay, we're going to revamp your swing. And then the whole bottom fell out. Strikeout rate, ascended, everything. He had a disastrous year. Kind of surprising that he got the call this early in the year as well. So you wonder what the Blue Jays are doing. But is he 12-team eligible or stay away, just keep an eye on
it? Well, it's always that situation that you have to make the determination of who you're letting go. Is it worth taking the risk? Because I wrote in the article that, in my opinion, if Alford has a good season, he does what Jackie Bradley did last year. Okay, and people say, oh, Jackie Bradley. Like, no, Jackie Bradley hit .234 last year with like 17, 16 home runs. Not very good. I mean, he stole 17 bases because he only got caught once. That's like a top end to me of what Alford can do. Now, that's like a fifth outfielder, I think, is a top end for Alford because we've also got playing time concerns in addition to everything we just talked about. So if you want to throw the dart and hope that he's, this year's breakout guy, it could happen. He's a talented dude, but I'm not overly interested. Like he's, if we're doing a fab thing, he's a 5% kind of bid. He's not one of these guys you drop 30% on. He's a very moderate bid this week in free agency.
All right. Fair enough. Let's talk about a couple hitters since we're sort of on that kick anyway with the guys who have started out hot. What do you make of a guy like Tim Beckham from Seattle? The thing that stands out to me, Ray, about Beckham is he's always – those of us that track exit velocity and hard contact rates and things will always say, wow, it's always interesting. Tim Beckham's always hitting the ball hard. Never really seen the results. It's happened in short pockets for him in the past. We're only a week into the season. He's had a phenomenal start. What's the likelihood he continues this, and what kind of impact can he make for people?
Yeah, I was out visiting you in Arizona. We did labor when we were out there. AL labor, my team in that 12-team AL-only league. Tim Beckham's my third baseman. and it was $4.
Yeah.
So no one in that room even thought he was much of anything in an AL only league. Now, again, we make mistakes. It's not like we're an errant or anything like that, but 12 people in that room, no one went $5. So, I mean, that's like a $1 or $2 player in a mixed league. I went and looked at my Tout Wars 15-team mixed team. No one drafted Tim Beckham. Wasn't even drafted.
Right.
So the industry as a whole had the position of, not much to see there. Now, he does qualify at short and third.
Yeah.
He does have a little bit of speed, a little bit of power. We've seen the power on display. When I was writing about him last week at some point, I said, look, if this comes together for him, he can be Asdrubal Cabrera. And that's not bad. I mean, especially with that multi-position thing, 20 home runs, 7-8 steals.
That's not sexy.
No, it's not. And I don't think Tim Beckham is sexy. But if you know, the problem is, what are you paying for when you're adding him? If you're dropping 25% of your fab budget on him, or you're dropping Nick Senzel to add him, it's like, well, okay. But so I look at him, and again, I think that's a best case scenario. But if he plays daily, he could do it.
What about his teammate, Domingo Santana? Now, I'll give you some credit. You pointed this out to me. Can't remember if it was at one of these drafts or just on a side note or on a show. I can't remember where it was. But you mentioned, like, Domingo Santana, we all know he was a highly sought-after player, was just last year, coming off a big year 2 years ago with the Brewers, and just all dissipated, whatnot. He started out absolutely on fire so far, Ray Flowers. So, for one, do you own any shares of Santana? Feels like you do.
I do in the AL-only league we were just talking about.
Okay.
But I do.
You loading up Mariners.
Yeah. Stack. I will give credit that Vlad Sutler, who we work with, we had the Battle of the Experts section where we would take a player and both of us would take one side. I took the negative side on Santana because Vlad was so pro Santana, not because I didn't like Santana. I had him as a fifth starter in the outfield. I think maybe fourth in the final rankings, right around there. Vlad was very aggressively pushing him, saying, I think that return to where he was could happen again. The problem, this goes back to what we were just talking about with Alford. You know, Santana went 30-15 and then vanished.
Yeah.
And the team handled it wrong. I think that's part of it and everything. But he vanished. That's scary, And you see him hit that opposite field grand slam, and it's like it looks like he gets jammed, yet it's, 350 feet into the bleed. Like, you see the talent. It's there. People got him on the cheap because he wasn't costly, and you're going to ride it and hope it works out.
Yeah, he's hitting in the middle of the order too, which is important, shows the confidence that they have in him. Something's weird with the Brewers. Because I think Santana, and I think even Keon Broxton, who's now in
the
Mets, totally. Like, these guys are really high-skilled players and really intriguing fantasy players, for that matter, that popped and then went away. And that was my caution with Jesus Aguilar, who struggled mightily to start the season already. I already seen him get subbed out. How many three-hole hitters do you see get pinch hit for late in ball games? It's like, that's not what we like to see, ideally. But, jury's still out on Aguilar. He probably would be fine. But nevertheless, I just get skeptical of teams that have a guy that pops every year. Seemingly somebody just goes bananas for them, and they ride it to the ground. And then we forget about the guys who had done it previously. Speaking of which, Jock Peterson in L.A. with the Dodgers, right? Now, Dodgers are that team.
Mm-hmm.
Bellinger comes out of nowhere 2 years ago. Max Muncy comes out of nowhere last year. Jock Peterson was once, I believe, a top 10, if not top 5 prospect in all baseball, maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Yep.
And, comes out, has a multi-home run game right off the bat. And Max, I think he's got 3 as we sit here right now for a Dodger club that's mashing the ball around. What do you think of Jock Peterson?
Jock Peterson at AAA in 2014 hit 300 and went 30-30.
That's pretty good.
I mean, yeah, right?
He's only 27 years old, too.
Yeah.
It's not like this guy feels like he's been around forever, but he hasn't.
The odd thing is he sold 26 bases, 31 bases, 30 bases in the minor leagues, and he's got 15 steals in his big league career. He just stopped running. It's like, oh, man, we were all excited. Well, we're thinking he was going to steal 15 or 20.
This is one of those reasons where you got to watch the games too. No matter what you do, research-wise, stats and stuff. I don't know what happened. Well, okay, I'm going to say it. I don't know. I'm not afraid. It's our podcast. We can do what we want.
Yeah.
Dude's jacked up. Like, he's like, he's ripped now. When he came up, he was a string bean. He was fast in center field. And he, like you said, he stole bases. Like, he was there, I think, the first year he sort of stole a bunch of bases. And then that was – next year he came to camp, he's got, like, biceps and forearms and big neck. It's like, all right, this is weird. And you even see him. And I don't know. I look at – you remember his behavior in the postseason last year? Yeah. He's running on the bases, pointing at people. Yeah. It's like, okay, this guy's a little loose, if you know what I – if you get my drift. Like, something ain't right upstairs a little bit with Jock Peterson. And I wonder – because his body shape is completely different than when he was in those minor leagues back in 2013 and 14.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no, I can't disagree. He's got holes in his game. And, you know, he's Mr. Helium right now, right? It's like everywhere you look. And let's just face facts. Max Muncy was great last year, right? Out of nowhere, one of these guys came out of nowhere. And what are the Dodgers doing? They're benching him against lefties. Mm-hmm. Okay. What are they going to do with Peterson? They're going to bench him against lefties. Why? He's hit 181 against lefties in his career. Can't hit left-handed pitching. Right. He can't. I mean, and he actually makes Kyle Schwarber look like he's a pretty decent hitter against lefties, Jeff. I mean, he's even worse.
That bad,
yeah. He's bad. He's just bad at it. And the Dodgers, with their pitching staff, mix and match. The Dodgers, with their offense, mix and match. So people that are spent big this past weekend in FAB, and I know there were a lot of them, they made a mistake. Because it's very difficult to envision him greatly improving upon his plate appearance total. I mean, can he get 500 plate appearances with the way the Dodgers – I don't know if he can. And even if he can, what's a 248 hitter with 29 home runs worth? I don't think it's worth people paid this week.
And why do we put in the work? And why am I ultra confident just 1 week into the start of the season? For the topic and conversation we just got to, they're right there. Look at the Dodgers, and you look at who are the best hitters on the Dodgers, or just go through their lineup, and you're Jack Peterson and Corey Seager and Bellinger and Muncy. Ray, what do those guys have in common? Do you notice any trend with those hitters that I named, Bellinger, Seager, Jack Peterson?
They might swing from the same side.
Oh, they do indeed. And I don't know if it was with you or Ted or by myself, but we broke down the NL West and those rotations, and I'll let you guess because you're a smart guy. What do you think we noticed about the National League Western Division's starting pitching?
That there were left-handed pitchers in it?
Oh, yes, like Bumgarner and Holland and Pomeranz and Lauer, Lucchesi, Marnavius, Strom and Freeland and Anderson. There's a lot of them. So there you go. It's a pretty big deal. And they're going to face a lot of lefties. And those bats right there are going to be on the bench more often than not. So there you go. Anything else here, Ray Flowers, that we have not got to? Any topics?
It just popped. Might as well bring – we had Ronald Acuna sign the $100 million eight-year extension or 124, whatever it ended up being, with the Braves. That was the big story of the day of this podcast. Just as we're getting ready to close down the podcast, we get another one of these contracts.
Oh, what happened?
This one is by you and me's kind of guy, by Pete Christensen's number one guy, Germán Márquez.
Oh,
with the Rockies, signed a 5-year, $43 million extension. It also includes a club option that becomes a mutual option for both sides if he's got two top three Cy Young finishes in 5 years, which seems rather unlikely. So, 5 years, $43 million for Márquez. The Rockies, you know, controlling him now. If you're saying less than $9 million a year, okay. He should be able to throw innings and strike guys out. I don't think he's a star, Jeff, and he's not getting paid like a star, but a nice chunk of change there for Germán Márquez.
Yeah, they're buying out a lot of option. Like, teams don't want to go to arbitration evidently anymore, which, fine. I mean, I don't know. I kind of would rather have arbitration. I know you're going to end up – you could end up paying more money, but you also are getting the production at least as a team. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'll pay for production. If you're a Major League Baseball club, if somebody has produced for you, then paying them is not a big deal. It's locking them in, paying them a lot of money, and hoping that they're going to produce for you. That's the weirdness there, and you got to take the power back. But kudos to Márquez. Kudos to Acuna and Jimenez and all these guys getting these deals. Get that money while you still can. Remember, everybody, fantasyguru.com, our fantasy baseball package over there. It was never a draft guide. Well, it was, but it's also a full service, whole season fantasy baseball and just Major League Baseball in general site and guide and product that we are there every single day of the year. Those of you who listen to us on Sirius XM Radio, you'll say, oh, why aren't you talking baseball? On fantasyguru.com, we're talking baseball every single solitary day for the rest of your lives, all of our lives. We will always be talking baseball, so don't ever think, never let you go. VIPs, remember, you get special chats. Ray did one this afternoon. It was packed, and people were hopping and talking fab and early season starts, and it was great stuff. You have several of those a week. We will be starting rolling out our live streams and exclusive podcasts only for VIP subs there as well. If you're a daily fantasy player, you want to dabble into it, elitefantasy.com. It's where to go. All of my daily fantasy baseball, cash game breakdowns, our coaching sessions, our GPP breakdowns, hitting coach, pitching coach, bullpen coach. It's all over there at elitefantasy.com. Check that out. And if you'd like to bet some ducats on the games, guruelite.com, baby. That's where to go for all your sports betting needs. So we got products everywhere. Good Lord, Ray.
Yeah, we got something for everyone, as they say, Jeff.
Absolutely. When do we get like a porn site?
Fantasy porn. We've talked about it since we basically met. I think that's how we actually met.
In the porn industry,
If we could figure that out, we could make enough money that we could quit this whole thing, Jeff. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I agree. Follow Ray Flowers at Baseball Guys on Twitter. Follow me at Jeff_Mans right there for you. That will do it for another episode of Fantasy Baseball Elite. Ray and I will be doing these throughout the course of the 2019 season. Also, Draft Cheat, Peter Christensen, and Vlad Sedler also going to be hosting many, many episodes of Fantasy Baseball Elite as we go through it. So very exciting. Appreciate you guys downloading, tuning into the podcast. Remember, subscribe, review, and give your thoughts. Even if you don't like it, I hate your stupid voice, whatever it may be. We want your feedback any way, shape, or form, everybody. All right. So for Ray Flowers, this is Jeff Mans, Fantasy Baseball Elite. See you next time, everybody. Deuces.